Hi there, and thanks for listening to the Adulting is Easy podcast. This is Lauren, and I manage the Adulting is Easy blog and podcast, which can be found at realadultingiseasy.com and anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you can safely do so, please take a second and hit the follow button wherever you're listening. I'm joined today by Mary, a real estate investor in the Tampa Bay area. She grew up in Florida, attended the University of Florida, and got a degree in education. She taught for 7 years in Europe and Asia, and for 5 years in the US before changing careers to advising medical students. When Mary was 34, she had her first child and quickly realized that she and her husband weren't prepared for retirement. So they wanted a different life than that 9-to-5 grind. And so they decided to start investing in real estate. They want to build up this portfolio to support them in retirement, but also pay for their kids' college. Mary, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to our talk.
Me too. It's rare that I meet somebody on Twitter who's like practically a neighbor. So this is going to be fun.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
So our goal for today is to make adulting a bit easier for our listeners by discussing a personal finance topic, since managing money is a big part of adulting. So today, Mary, you and I are going to talk about getting started and investing in real estate. Before we jump in, though, why don't you tell us about that realization that you had that you weren't really saving enough for retirement? How did that go?
Yes. So basically, it kind of starts in my 20s, where I decided I wanted to live in Europe and travel around. And I got to do that for 7 years, and it was really great and a lot of fun. But I didn't spend that time putting any money towards retirement or anything. And while I was living in Rome, Italy, I met my husband, and we traveled a little longer, but we decided to settle down here in Florida, and we were very frugal. We had spent 2 years in South Korea, saved $80,000 in 2 years. We were crazy frugal with our expenses, and we used that to buy a down payment on a house, to buy our cars outright, to pay off all our debt. So we were living very frugally, traveling a few times a year, putting money in our pensions and our 401ks. And then when we had my first daughter, we started thinking of, college, and then actually thinking about retirement. Because it's one thing to be working at a job and just like saying, yep, I'm matching my 401k, that's great. It's another to actually sit down, do the math, and see how much money you're going to have in retirement. And we felt a little bit like we needed to make up for our 20s being kind of traveling around and not, investing or saving for retirement. And at the same time, we thought, well, what else can we do? We're frugal. We have no bills, but our finances don't seem that great. I didn't really know about investing 401k or IRAs or brokerage accounts. But we were like, what are we going to do with this savings we have and this money? We didn't know. And then I actually spoke to a financial planner, and she was talking about her investing, and I said, oh, well, great. What can I do? And she's like, oh, well, you guys have pensions and 401ks, you're fine. But then she told this story about, her brokerage account and all this money she was putting in it. And she did that after the crash. And I thought to myself, well, why can't I do that? Why are you talking about doing that? And she didn't suggest that my husband and I do that. So I immediately started researching, like, what's a brokerage? How do I buy a stock? I mean, I didn't realize these things. So we, went full into that. We were basically living off just his pay and putting my entire pay into investing it and that kind of savings. And I mean, basically, we were kind of living like the FIRE lifestyle without knowing anything about it. I didn't know it existed at the time. And then I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which, this is the story for a lot of people. And I immediately came home. I said to my husband, we have to buy real estate. And that's just what we have to do. And I mean, he just was like, what are you talking about? He couldn't believe what I was saying. And I was like, look, we're never going to kind of get where we want to be. We won't be able to retire early. We won't be able to do these things unless we buy real estate. I was just all in. And I kind of warmed down over time, but mostly it took just running the numbers and showing them. And I think too, kind of showing them that I was really committed to it. I spent several months researching and stuff. And I'm sure we could go into that, but it was like, he finally kind of saw the way I saw it. And so that's kind of what happened was having my daughter sparked it, but it was just this realization that I don't want to just work till 65 and just accept that that's the only choice that we have. We got to do something big to change the path that we're on, basically.
That is an amazing realization, isn't it? You're like, you don't even realize, I don't think, or I didn't, all these kind of scripts and paradigms and models that you have in your head about how your life should go and how it has to go, which always like ends with like a retirement in your 60s or whatever. And then this moment, I had the same thing where it hits you and you're like, oh man, but what if I didn't do that? What if I wanted to be done sooner? And I remember thinking, you know, we're set, right? Like you said, I was maxing out a 401k, maxing out a Roth IRA, had a good paying job, had like a really nice house, had one rental, had a BMW. I'm like, this is the life. Like I'm good. I'm set. And then like it hit me one day, like I can't stop working. I can't stop working, you know? And same with me, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which, you know, say what you want about the book. Is it true? Is it not true? Any of those things. That idea of having your money make enough money to pay for your expenses is powerful. And I had a very similar aha moment.
Yeah, it's amazing how it's just, it like clicks in your head and suddenly you think, oh my gosh, this, you know, I don't have to live like that. And here's the alternative. And it makes perfect sense. And I, you know, so I am the same. And the thing with Rich Dad, Poor Dad for me is it's, you have to accept it as it's a mindset book. It just right. changes the way you view it. You know, it's not real estate advice. It's not the blueprint to buying property, but it's a mindset shift in your understanding of what you need to do. And I actually put out a tweet that was kind of like, you know, he could have been boring and kind of listed the numbers on real estate property, but he told it through a story format. So who cares if it's true or not? It's kind of based on a true story, I think.
Right. And I'm sure those guys exist, right? That rich dad, that poor dad, in some exactly. form or fashion, they exist. And we all know, I mean, I've sold training for 8 years, right? We all know that if you can couch a learning in a story, people are more likely to attend to it and to remember it, to be able to recall it and to have those aha moments and to internalize the topic. So that makes total sense. And so I'm glad you brought that up. So you've read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. How did the conversation with your husband go? I know you kind of touched on it, but literally, how did that go?
It was really hard because he was just like, what? And it was kind of like a brick wall at first, right? So what I did was we had that first conversation, which didn't go well. And so what I did was I just kept informing myself, educating myself. I read a couple more books. I listened to a podcast every day. I started going to, this is the funny thing, right? I didn't know what to do when you want to start buying real estate. So I just started going to open houses. And he was working on a dissertation at the time. And so he would be working on that all day Saturday. So I'd take our daughter, she's like 2 and a half, and I would just go to open houses because I don't know, right? And I would talk to some real estate agents. I kind of, they would give me like the numbers for some lenders to call or some brokers. And you would kind of get a bit of a feel for what's going on. And also I didn't know what to look for in a property. So I would just kind of ask them some things. And then I would start trying to walk through the house like, well, if I'm going to buy this, what am I looking for? You know, you just don't know at first. And so I did this like week after week after week. And I think about a month into it, he just noticed I was still doing this. It wasn't like a fad. It wasn't like a just an idea. And then a week later, I forgot about it. So I think that kind of impacted him. And so he kind of would ask me some questions. So I didn't bring it up. I would just come home and I wouldn't talk about it. And so one day he was like, well, so what'd you look at today? You know, so I kind of told him some stuff, or he would just say like, oh, well, what's this? And I would just let him ask me. And so then when he kind of seemed a little bit more interested, I would be like, well, if we did this, you know, then I'd kind of get excited. And then he'd kind of go, well, maybe, right? So I sort of slowly over time also kind of educated him because, you know, I was kind of learning. So I was kind of ahead of him in the curve of understanding like how to run the numbers, what you're looking for, all these things. So I would kind of tell them, well, I eventually pulled out a spreadsheet and was like, look at if this is your mortgage payment, these are your expenses, this is what's left over, you know, and then he'd say, well, how would we do it? So I'm like, well, we can get a HELOC on our house. He's like, well, what's a HELOC? It was slowly doing that. And it probably took, I started probably educating myself somewhere in September, October 2019. And he, I think, started to come on board around December, January. But it definitely took a few months. So it was like, it wasn't one conversation. It was many conversations, I would say.
That's amazing. And I love that you're like, all right, that didn't go well. No problem. I'm just going to keep educating myself. And naturally, if you're obviously you can hear it in your voice that you're passionate about it, that's bound to wear off after a while, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing is like, I'm like, okay, I'll just do it, you know, like, and every time he talked to me about it, I'm getting excited. I'm showing him these numbers and he's kind of like, really? Like he didn't believe me. I'm like, right. Honey, I can't, you know, I can't do anything with this math. This is math, you know, like, and yeah, you just kind of wear him down slowly, but it worked.
I love it. What I want people to pay attention to also are these dates, right? We're talking about late 2019 to early 2020, right? And right now it's early 2022. So we're not talking about like buying 2015, 2016, or even before that, like when I bought like my first house in 2012, right? It's like, we're not talking about that time period. We're talking about very recent when it's been the top of the market, right? Top of the market, top of the market, top of the market, and top of the market for years, right? Yeah. So I think that's amazing that you weren't worried that it was too high, that you had missed the boat or anything like that.
Yeah. I kind of was like, okay, well, where am I going to buy? I think that's what you have to think about. Once you know how to run the numbers, you kind of know what you're looking for. The next step is to say, okay, well, where am I going to buy these properties? I first looked, you know, right in my area at these open houses and things like that. And it was a bit too high for me, for the basically, you know, our capital, how far our money would go. We knew we'd only be able to buy a couple properties and then we'd be kind of maxed out for a while. So we decided to kind of, okay, well, where else can I find the property? I was talking to people and I was telling a friend and she had a friend who bought places. So I offered to pay for lunch and just take her out and talk to her and ask her like a million questions. And in that process, she talked about this area that's, you know, nearby here. And then it came up a couple more times. So we went and we drove up there to just look around. And it's basically the county I live in is quite pricey. It's very popular area, but the county just to the north, so it's like an hour north, is, and I know you know this, Lauren, it's significantly cheaper. The taxes are cheaper. The property is cheaper. So we went and looked there. This is where this investor told me about. And then when we were looking around, we're like, oh, we can find deals and we can actually get really good deals here. So okay, this is it. Let's buy here. So I think a big part of it is like, it's not, I mean, I didn't even think about, yes, you hear stories like it used to be so much cheaper in 2010. Okay, well, it's not 2010 anymore. I, you know, so I can't get a $40,000 foreclosure. Okay, fine. But what can I get? And what's the best value I can find, you know, somewhere either near here or we were willing to buy out of state if that's what it took. Right. So yeah, you just got to find where's the deals, you know?
Yeah. We went through that too. Cause you know, I live in the same county. I was born in the same county and we bought our bed and breakfast there and we got a good deal on it. It had been on the market for a long time. It was listed on the MLS with no address. It was listed on the income section. I just think people literally didn't see it in a lot of cases. So we got a pretty good deal on it.
That's awesome.
And then when we were ready for the next step, we did the same thing. We went north, like we went 20 minutes north or whatever, which is actually where I am right now. So we did the same thing. It's like, okay, I'm going to buy out of this county. I'm going to buy a little bit out of the beaten path. And like my family thought I was nuts. They're like, what are you doing buying up there? Right. But I was like, listen, this is where the numbers work. I can buy it for this. I can rent it for this. I can't do that. You know, trying to explain myself to them. So you were, I'm assuming when you were going to these open houses that they were single families. And follow-up question, is that the first thing you bought was a single family?
Great question. Yeah. So the open houses were all single family for sure. You know, you kind of start with what you know. Lived in a house. Okay, let's go look at houses. I did work a little bit with a realtor. I saw a few properties and mostly single families. And then we went to one duplex. And the reason I stopped working with him was because he said to me, it was in like a, I would say a B minus neighborhood. So it was, you know, like it was,
yeah.
You know, there's some areas you got to know what the area is. You have to understand the tenant. You have to understand, mm-hmm. you know, everything about it. Right.
But yeah, it's nothing good or bad. It just is.
It just is.
Right. Yeah.
It's just you adjust or you just know very well exactly what you are buying and what you need to do. And you know, you have your plans in place. Mm-hmm. But he said to me, because it was just me, by the way, this is still going when I did eventually go with a realtor look at property. My husband's like, where are you going? I'm like, oh, I'm going to look at houses, honey. I've been telling you. He's just like, okay. Like it doesn't know, like looking at me like I'm crazy. But so the realtor said to me, you know, I mean, you're just a female doing this. I don't know if this is right for you, but maybe you should look at condos. That's a good idea.
Oh, and I had a guy tell me to look at condos too.
What is that about? So sorry.
We can't do maintenance, Mary. That's why.
Apparently, I can't just hire someone to do it for me if I don't want to, but whatever. I can use a hammer, but... I think he wasn't sure about the tenants, which is what's really funny about it is in our business, I manage the tenants completely.
100%. 100%.
It's like, so he thought I couldn't handle the tenants anyway. So in my head, so in person, I was like, oh, well, thank you for your feedback. I appreciate that. And then in my head, I'm like, I'm not working with this person ever again. Right. So that's fine. Anyway, so I did look at the time I looked at one multifamily, but our focus was on single family homes. And that is the first property we bought. We bought a single family home.
Okay. And that was what month?
So we got it under contract in February 2020.
Oh, wow.
And you know what's coming?
Yes.
Our closing date was the weekend that Florida shut down with the pandemic.
That's so funny. Our bed and breakfast, we went under contract the Friday everything shut down.
Oh my God.
It was scary times.
It was scary. I bet you were like, is this deal even going to happen? Because
oh yeah, we backed out. Like we had we went under contract on Friday. We had our, right, literally like the Friday everything shut down. We had our inspection scheduled for the Tuesday and we ended up canceling it. And backing out of the contract and then renegotiating like 2 weeks later for like $20,000 less.
Ooh, so it actually, that's like, nice.
It actually worked out because it was a bed and breakfast and everything was shut down. If you think about it. So it actually, it worked out for us because she couldn't have anybody stay there. And it made her feel a little more of the pinch of not having revenue come in. And with the uncertainty, you know. She just came down. So anyways, it's not about me. So March 2020, you close, mid-March 2020 on your first single family home. Did it have tenants in it?
It did have tenants, yes. We got, I say we got lucky on the first deal just because it, you know, but we had looked at several properties in this area. We had actually spent a month just driving. We had a map. We printed it out.
I did the same thing.
Oh my God, did you?
I had a value highlighted, please.
Yes, we drove up and down streets. Yes. And then by color was like, buy on this street, not on this street. Like,
yep. Oh my God, that's so funny.
That is so funny. So we knew that the thing is, what's great about that is you know the area really well. You know by the street what you would buy. So you can mm-hmm. immediately make the decision. There is no wondering with that. So we looked at, I think it was the third house we went to see.
Hold on real quick. Your husband is on board at that point then.
Okay. This point is on board. Yes.
Going. Like he finally was like, all right, fine. I'll go.
Yeah. So I must've worn him down over the Christmas holidays or something, you know, we're stuck for 2 weeks together and he just like caved, but yes, by this point for sure, because I really don't think it would be very hard to move forward if you don't have your partner on board. At
well,
least,
yeah, right? If you have like a loan, they I think not even if you don't have a loan, they literally, if you're married, they have to sign a document.
Exactly. You got it.
I mean, literally.
They got to sign on somehow. Even if I was doing everything by myself, they got to at least agree that the money can go there. So, you know, so he was on board. So that was like probably somewhere in January. I decided to do like a 90 day challenge, and it was like buy your first property by the end of the 90 days, which I thought was, it worked really well for me. It gave me like a,
love it.
You have an end date, do it. Right.
Yep.
So we did this, we drove around, and then we did have a kind of friend of family who was a realtor. So we used her, and then the third house we went to see, we ended up buying that place. It still is. It's still great, but it was just had been renovated in 2018, like completely. They even put on a small addition. The houses in that area have like these weird bathroom garage things. They had enclosed that into like just a full bathroom, which was great to have that version of the house. And they had, it was like new roof, new AC. And so they sold, I know, it was, everything was done. There were tenants. They had sold the property to this woman who lived in South Florida, and I guess she fell ill. So she had only owned it for like 7 months and then had it on the market. So we were like, yep. We actually came in a little bit under. She came down a little. We were a couple thousand off, and we were like, we're really going to give up this house for $2,000. So we just...
Yeah.
We went, yep, we're going to take that price. We still have those tenants in there. They're teachers. I mean, it's just like, I wish they would stay forever. I always joke with them. They actually, I had a son in July, and they bought us like a little baby gift. I mean, it was very sweet. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. But they're the perfect kind of renters for this area. It's kind of why we bought there, because they work in our county, but the rent's cheaper there. So they drive and commute. They're like, you know, in their late 20s, they're both professionals. They just want to live in a house and with rent they can afford. So they're great. And so that was the kind of the first property.
So did it get easier after that?
It definitely got easier. I would say that, you know, for sure the first property is the hardest, because you don't know what you're doing. You know, you're not sure what to buy. You are scared. I remember, oh my gosh, of course, we're wearing masks, which is a new thing. It was like day two of wearing masks, right? Yeah. We're in, title companies were deemed essential, so they stayed open, right? Mm-hmm. But we're wearing masks. We're not even like sure about this whole thing. We're signing the paperwork and we're just sitting there like, oh my gosh, what are we doing?
There is so much fear. There's that moment of, am I doing the right thing? And I don't know, do you feel this way where you're like, if this was a good deal, somebody else would have bought it?
Yes.
Right.
100% all the time. Even now. It's okay, why hasn't it sold yet?
Right, exactly. And I have that thought at the title company.
Oh my gosh, right? And I'm like, okay, well, if this goes south, it's just one house. So
right, exactly.
But I mean, you just got to do it. I mean, that's in the end. Once you have to trust that the process works.
Yeah.
So it was the same of like, okay, first figure out where you're going to buy. Okay, now we figure that out. Great. That step's done. So now figure out what the next step is. Okay, that step's done. And now, okay, we're going to do an offer. So that's done. And then you learn so much from inspections and, you know, all the processes, all the documentation, everything you go through, you just learn a lot as you're doing it. So you do gain confidence. I'll say too, the second one was hard as well. I think because you're going to have this little bit of momentum. You're like, oh, I bought a property. And then it like is a little bit of work, right? I remember the month after we bought the house, the tenants texted me and was like, oh, the AC's out. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So, and of course it's a Saturday because, you know, it can't go out on a Wednesday morning.
No, it's got to be an emergency call.
Right. So, and I'm like, the one thing in Florida is they have to have AC. I mean, that is like,
oh yeah,
you have to. So
especially at whenever that, what was it? So this is like March to April. Yeah,
exactly.
It's hot. Exactly. Like maybe in January you could go without it.
You can handle it.
Almost no other month of the year can that happen.
Exactly. Like literally right now. And then that's it, you know. Yeah. So I'm like, oh my gosh. So try to get our company, you know, and we were still new. So we didn't have all the companies we use now. You didn't have your go-to person, your, you know, that. So we were trying to call around and it all worked out. It was fine, but it was a little bit of a stressful moment where you're like, oh, is this what it's going to be like? Right. So I do think the first one's definitely the hardest. The next one's a little hard too, because of that. And you're
maybe also there's an expectation that it's going to be easier.
Yes.
Like a lot easier. And it's kind of like maybe marginally easier or the same exact thing as the first one.
Exactly. No, it's so true. And then you're like, and you know, and you're not really cash flowing. You're not doing it for the cash flow at that moment, right? No. You're not really making anything. So you're like, it's a lot of effort for like, what's going on? Right. You know, so you got to remind yourself of the numbers, remind yourself what you're, why you're doing it. And I've said this to a lot of people. I'm like, the amount of work for one or two properties is almost the same as like, you know, 10 properties. So you've got to get going, have your systems in place and be in it for the long haul, because it's got, you got to give it time to build up. You know,
you have to. You have to just keep. You have to just keep going, just over and over, and just trust it, because there is a moment of, in my opinion, frustration, where you're spending a lot of time and money, and you're not. No, it doesn't seem like anything's coming in. Like it seems like you're paying to work at first.
Yes, this is 100% true.
So, all right. So that was the first. So the first one was in March 2020. When was the second one then?
The second one was actually just a couple months later, which was good. It was, of course, with COVID, we thought, yay, we're going to buy like 10 more. The market's going to crash. I
absolutely
can't wait.
Yep. How'd that go?
That's not what happened. So, but there was a you know, there was a couple of months there where we didn't know.
Right. Yes. Yep.
Which I give you so much credit for going through with that, the property you bought, because you, I'm sure you on the seller was like, yep, I'm unloading this. And you're kind of like, oh, I'm buying this property.
Yeah. Right, and we bought before we sold our other house.
Oh my gosh.
So we had the money for the down payment, but we needed to sell the other house to get the renovation money.
Yes.
And we had $150,000 renovation ahead of us too. So that was nerve-wracking. And that was the first renovation. And we only had, you know, one rental at the time. So that was insane. Actually looking back, like that was nuts.
You don't actually realize how insane something is until later.
Like way
later. When you're in the middle of it, you're just doing it.
Yeah. You're like, this is fine. Like, it's fine. I have no kitchen. It's fine. I can see through my wall to the outside. This is fine. And you look back, you're like, how do we live that? And I'm like, oh, wine. We drink a lot of wine. That's how we got through.
Oh my God.
I remember now.
That was my year last year. So we can touch on that if you want to, but, and I couldn't have wine because I was pregnant. So it's like, wow. But yeah, so the second one, of course, with COVID, our realtor, the one we had worked with for the first property, she went and like videoed the house. So at the time, no one was, this is still when you basically weren't looking at properties.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know, real estate agents were going in and taking a video. And honestly, that really works too. I mean, this is why people can buy out of state. You know, it was, absolutely, you got the gist of it.
Well, yeah. And if you're buying a single family home of similar square footage, similar construction, similar area, it's like, okay, I mean, what are we, are we splitting hairs at this point? Right. It's about, is it renovated or is it not? Or, you know, I mean, I would think it was pretty similar if it's in the same area to your first one too.
Exactly. This is what people, I try to like convey to people when I'm talking to them about this, is that the houses just have walls and roofs and kitchens and bathrooms. I mean, there's nothing lurking and hidden. You know, there are a few things you look out for specifically. That's why you have inspections, but like, it's fairly straightforward once you understand what everything is. You know?
I mean, yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, this one has a different color bathroom or something, or this bathroom's old, it hasn't been redone, or this one has new floors. I mean, yeah, for sure. So your second one was a single family home. And I guess I'll just drop this now. It's 2022. We're recording. It's January. It's be posted pretty soon after that. So you've got 7 properties now. So if I'm doing math, we're talking March 2020 for the first one. We're talking like, say, summer 2020 for the second one. where do these other five come from? I mean, did you buy a whole portfolio? I mean, what happened?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I will tell you what happened. Well, first we were looking for one more. We were like, well, maybe, okay, we got two now. This is great. We're home because, of course, with COVID, schools closed, and we're working from home. We're like, oh, great. Can we find something else? And of course, as we're deciding this, numbers, property values are starting to shoot up. We almost bought a fourplex in Gulfport, like a block from the beach. It's still the one that got away from me. Yes, I will never forget this place. It's anyway. I like
Gulfport. I really do. It's adorable.
It's like literally around the corner from where the market is, and it will always be the house that I like. Anyway,
what was it, just too much? Because you had two houses, didn't have any multis, and you're going from two doors and you're trying to buy four. What was it about that one that made you not buy it?
It was the sellers.
Okay.
They had agreed on a price, and we were going to have a partner who was going to help with the rehab.
Okay.
And we were going to be able to fund the rest of it with our HELOC, the rest of our HELOC that we had. And the sellers agreed on a price, and it was already pushing it with the price. So we didn't want to go any higher. They agreed verbally. And then we got the contract. We signed it. It was over the weekend, and then we didn't hear anything. And we're like, what's going on? What's going on?
I hate that.
And then they came back asking $50,000 more, which was like, it was a hard, I wrote the strongest politely worded email I could come up with.
So unprofessional.
It's so unprofessional. It was so unprofessional. And I don't know if I had called, like, it came about because I called we were looking in this area, which again, we can talk about in a second, but we were looking in this specific area. I called it a real estate agent or the listing agent for a property and just said, oh, I'm looking in that area. The property is under contract, but you know, if you come across anything else, keep me in mind. Well, she called me like a day later and was like, oh, this just came across my desk. It's right a block from the beach. It's blah, blah, blah. But she knew like their agent, the seller's agent, like it was a personal friend. And I don't know if that's what the issue was, that like she was telling her friend, yeah. And then like didn't actually clear it with her clients. I don't know.
That's the most frustrating part, I think, of real estate is the telephone games, where I can say something one way to my realtor, that realtor has to say it to the other realtor, and then that realtor has to say it to the seller. I wonder often if like content and tone and things like that get lost from one end to the other. I really do.
Yes, I agree. It was upsetting, but we said no, and then they took a higher offer. And you know what? Fine.
That's not your fault, and you had your numbers, and 50,000, I mean I don't know how much that quad was, but that's got to be on a percentage basis a huge increase of what you were
it was a about. Huge increase, yeah, especially because you had to pay for, you know, flood insurance, obviously,
of course, the beach. Yep.
There was all this extra inspections you needed because of like the area it was in, you know. And so we had already factored all our numbers in, and we are strict on our numbers, which I think helps. So it's like, sometimes you have to walk away. Sometimes you have to say no.
So what did you end up buying instead of that?
And by the way, this dragged out for like 2 months. So that was the rest of 2020. Mm-hmm. And we were thinking we were getting this property. Mm-hmm. They asked for like a 60-day closing. Anyway, so we waited. Whatever.
Right. So you weren't making offers. You weren't looking. So I get that.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was going to be the rest of your HELOC. So what are you going to do?
Exactly. But then in that time, we got we actually got an offer on our personal residence from our neighbor. And we were kind of like, oh, you know, thanks, you know, whatever. And then we were like, well, if we sold our personal residence.
It's always, this is how it always goes.
Well, this is what happens is once you then get this other brilliant idea where you think, well, actually, if we did that, we would be able to buy a lot more property. We had been thinking about kind of house hacking or doing like a, we buy a property to move in and we rent the house out. It's in a gorgeous neighborhood. It's right near the beach, just south of Clearwater Beach, you know, so if anyone knows that area. And, but we did the numbers and renting it or even Airbnb, and it's actually a big area for Airbnb, but if we sold it, we could turn it into five more properties. So that's what we did.
Yep.
That's, and we actually have money left over.
Because you start thinking, where could I get some money? And you're looking around and you're like, oh, I'm sitting in it. I'm sitting in money right now. Yeah.
I am sitting in it.
So your next move was a house hack? Is that right?
Well, I call it a house hack. It's really that we are living and flipping. But So we're living in a house that we remodeled last year while we also bought the other properties that we had to remodel two out of the three. So we remodeled three properties while I was pregnant. So this is what I mean by it was a very interesting time. The thing is we had decided to sell the house. So this is like now Christmas last year. We decided to sell the house. My husband was doing all these little things so like nothing got dinged on the inspection report, right? We know what's in an inspection report. Absolutely. So we knew what to kind of just whatever. The people wanted to buy it from us without any realtors. So we just used a lawyer and a title company, but we wanted to make sure we had everything kind of taken care of. So we're going through that and we were like, oh, well, let's, you know, find a property that we can move into and whatever. And then I find out that I am pregnant. So we're like, does this change the plans? And we're like, no, it doesn't change the plans. Okay, let's just keep plowing ahead. Finding a property that to move into under market value because it needed a bunch of work. It had previously had tenants in it. So it was a renter's house in a nice area, a really nice area next to a really good school. So we originally had thought we'll move in, fix it up. In a year, we'll move into something else and rent it and keep it as a rental. But right now, at least, the HOA is telling us we can't do that. Even though we were told we could, now they've changed their mind.
I hate that.
Which I love HOAs. But you know, we had our you have to have a backup plan, right? You have to B plan, C plan. So we're like, we'll sell it. I mean, we're going to probably make 50 or 60,000 on it. So we'll be fine.
But you're going to live in it 2 years because of the taxes probably, right?
Yeah, I think basically if we find something really good to move into, like really good, we'll just pay the taxes that are, you know, capital gains because you've been in a year.
Right.
And then we're just going to like look all this year. And if nothing pops up, then we're not in a hurry so that we can be in it 2 years so we can sell it without. Because our personal residence, I mean, we had bought it for $150,000. I mean, it's in this great neighborhood. I mean, that's what, you know, the 2008 crash did, because we bought it in like 2013. So there were still those kind of deals. So we had, it was like 150,000 and we sold it for 360, which is crazy. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And so we just kind of took that with our other savings that we had and we bought five properties. So it's the one we're in, which, you know, only 3.5% down. I think we put down like 10 grand or it was less than that. And then we bought three duplexes all in the same area.
Wait, do I remember that two are like next door to each other?
Yeah. Two are next door and one is like around the corner. Basically what happened was with COVID, we had to pivot because as we're going through that property I talked about near the water, every single week, the housing prices were skyrocketing.
Yes.
And the rents weren't yet catching up. So now the rents are catching
up. Right. Yes. Yes.
The rents weren't catching up. So when we got over this fourplex we'd been holding out for, we looked around and we're like, oh, we're not getting anywhere near the numbers we had just like 6 months ago.
Yep. For sure.
So we decided to pivot into small multifamily because that's now where the value was.
Absolutely. I went through the same thing in St. Pete. Same exact thing. Yep. Absolutely.
And I kind of honed in. I did the same kind of thing. I'm like driving around. Okay. What are the areas of small multifamilies? What are the deals? Mm-hmm. What's going on? And I found this little area. You probably are familiar with it, but it's like, because now people are getting priced out of St. Pete.
Yep.
There's this area just north of it that's just over the bridge, so they can commute to Tampa. They can commute to St. Pete. There's an airport, so it's, you know, it's near the St. Pete Tampa airport. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of companies near there, and so people working for these companies or working at the airport are now wanting to live just in this kind of like neighborhood, and there's a lot of multifamilies in there. And people are buying them and kind of fixing it up and making it really nice. And so now it's kind of the neighborhood's changing right there in that area. So it's like literally 6 or 7 streets. So I know like every single property on every single street. I mean, I like literally email like a couple of the owners and I'm like, just let me know. Don't forget if you want to sell.
Yep. That's awesome.
Yeah. So
it was all 2021, buying the one that you're in and buying those 3 duplexes. It was all 2021.
Yep. It was.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. And they're all rented and remodeled.
Yes. We still have one more unit to do, which we're going to do in May this coming up year. But we did most of the work. They need a new roof. The first one needed a new roof, new ACs, new electrical panels. It needed the one side needs more work. And we're just waiting for the tenant. We agreed to let her stay a year. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how are you financing them? Are you financing them with like W-2s and rental income, or are you financing them as businesses? How is that working now?
Yeah. So right now it's still W-2 and rental income at the moment. We're looking to open, you know, an LLC this coming up year and start kind of going in that direction, because we're kind of going to be reaching the end of how many loans, you know, the banks want to give us. Plus, we want to refinance the first property already, even though it seems we would have never done it this quick. But literally, it's almost $100,000 up in value. Yeah. So we're like, refinance while the interest rates are low, and it's gone up like that. So we're going to do that one more refinance coming up now. And then we're going to kind of see what we want to buy next. But so that's basically, so we basically used the cash from that selling our primary property. I did have a partner who we've already paid back after we refinanced out the money, but we've just been kind of buying with cash, refinancing it, using that money, that basically getting pretty much all the same money back out, leaving a little bit left in, and then just buying more. And then, this coming up year, we're going to probably end up going the commercial route a little bit more than we have been.
Do you have a favorite deal?
So the second duplex is definitely my favorite. It is one of those, we just got it off market in such a great way. And then it's just been a cash king. I mean, it's just amazing. Knock on wood. Basically, the first duplex we bought needed a ton of work. It's been just tons of money thrown at it. Right now, we're reconcreting the front walkway. I mean, it's just like never ending.
Right.
But because I bought that, the listing agent was like, you know, the duplex, it's the one next door. So the duplex next door just there, I know the owner and he wants to sell. And I don't think he wants to put it on the market. He just wants to like sell it. He
had magically sell it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, that's my favorite kind, right? And so she goes, are you interested in looking? And this is literally like, just really quick, the first duplex, I offered on it and got the offer accepted before I even looked at it. Mm-hmm. Because it was I knew it was an amazing price. I knew it would go in it was half a day.
Yep.
I think she picked our offer because, you know, we were working with her. Of course, they keep the commission, but I think she liked us. So that helped. Mm-hmm. But so the next day after I saw it on the market at like 8 a.m, put an offer on it, had it closed by like the afternoon. And then the next day went to see it. On the next day, that's when she's like, well, that house, he hasn't listed it yet, but I know he, you know, wants to sell it. And I was, and she's like, are you interested? We're like, yes, immediately. Yes. I don't even care. I'll see it later. She's like, oh, I don't have the keys for it. I don't care. I'll look later. Just yes. Right. So, and so we got it for a great deal. The appraisal came back 20,000 over,
wow.
20,000 over, which immediately you're excited because instant equity.
Absolutely.
And Yeah. And then it had tenants on both sides. Well, one tenant moved out. They were paying, each side was paying $900. We asked them for $950 on when we re-rented. They, both their leases were coming up. But we're like, the guy had already remodeled the whole place. This is the crazy thing. Like, he had redone everything except there were terrazzo floors and he didn't, you know, finish the floors. I'm like, are you kidding? Give me terrazzo.
I love those.
So all we did spend, you know, a couple of thousand redoing the floors. And then that's great. Anyway, so then the one tenant who had re-signed, she moved out kind of suddenly. And we're kind of like, we let her out of her lease. We're like, it's fine. Just let us have a, you know, have some tenants look if we do put it on the market right away. And she's like, that's fine. I mean, so she was paying $950. We had 40 applications.
Oh,
I listed it in 24 hours. I listed it for $1,200, right? I ended up raising it because I had so many applications. I didn't even know what to do with myself.
Right.
And so we rented it out for $1,250.
Wow.
So it's just, it's one of those deals where you get this really great price, kind of easy. It appraises above, the rent goes up, like, and we did basically nothing. I mean, now, like I said, we did, we polished the terrazzo, hoping that it'll last now like several years, but yeah, it's one of those deals. I'll probably never have a deal that simple again with the cash flow doubled. I mean, it was just crazy. So
amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Congrats on that. That's awesome.
Oh, thank you. I'm just excited. I hope everyone can find deals like that. It's just so exciting. I know. Like that.
Buying under appraised value is amazing. Our bed and breakfast, we bought 15 under, and then this duplex, in the North County, appraised $10,000 over. And that is a really good feeling, especially now because like appraisals are coming in short in this area. I don't know if you've been hearing that, but a couple of people I know, their appraisals came in short in their houses.
Yes. So I don't know if, I mean, it was just in April 2021. So I don't know, if it's June. Now, you know.
Yeah.
But I was excited.
That's amazing. Congrats. That's awesome. Well, I have to ask you. What do you say to people who think the real estate market is too high to buy right now?
I get this all the time. You know, what I say is you have to start now. There is nothing to wait for. I understand that there was a big crash in 2008. There was lots of foreclosed homes. There was, you know, there were crazy values. You hear people telling you all these stories of $40,000, $50,000 houses. Those days are gone and they're not coming back. The market right now is so different to that time. Yes, it might go down a little bit, but you can't wait because 3 years ago when I started trying to educate myself, people were saying, well, we're waiting for the market to go down, right? We're waiting for the crash. 2 years ago, this past year, I mean, in 2021, I mean, everyone, all they're talking about is how the real estate market is a bubble and the housing market's a bubble and all this stuff. And you know, I bought four properties and it is still going up. So you can't wait. You just have to figure out where to buy, find a deal, know your numbers, have exit plans, figure out how to manage tenants, buy one property at a time. And, you know, if you have to get creative, there's so many ways to be creative with buying properties, but you can't wait. You've got to start now. There's nothing to wait for. You gain experience, then you can figure out other things down the road. And you know what? If the market's going to crash, gain some experience now so that when it does crash, you'll figure out how to buy a bunch of cheap property. So either way, you just got to go for it. That's kind of my advice to everybody.
I couldn't agree more. And the housing market is not the stock market, right? The stock market has corrections and those are like healthy for it, right? Real estate market doesn't have those kinds of corrections generally, and certainly not all at one time, except for 2008. And if anyone is kind of trepidatious about the real estate market, I read two books about it. One was Too Big to Fail, and the other one was Confessions of a Subprime Lender. And if you read one or both of those books, you really come away with a very deep understanding of what happened in 2008, and it will make you feel better about what is happening right now, because it's just because prices are high does not mean it's the same thing. It just doesn't. And I totally agree with you, Mary. We bought a duplex in St. Pete in 2019. We sold it 2 years later for over $100,000 more. Oh, and yeah, 1031 exchange into a 6-unit. We were, it was high at the time. I was like, I can't believe I'm paying $170,000 for this duplex. I can't believe I'm paying that much for it. Right. You're like, cause somebody bought it and whatever, and it was 60 grand, whatever. The point is it's 170 now. And you know what? Somebody just bought it for 285. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, it's just because it seems high right now doesn't mean it is. I don't want to belabor that point too much, but I mean, the market could go up 20% before it drops 5, right? So you're still in the black. So, so what's next for you? Are you done?
No way, right? It's just too exciting, right? So we are right now, we're actually looking for, we want to do a small multifamily house hack, which I know I have two kids and that's a crazy idea, but the value you can get out of that, we want to be in a really good area. There's this area my daughter goes to school in, and it is just the best cute little town. Prices are very expensive. So the numbers work better if we house hack. So we're looking for that. Our plan is like not really to rent anything else out in the property until we move out of it. So that we kind of keep it as our, just the whole thing is to us, is our plan with a family. If anyone's like, how do I house hack with a family? That's our plan. We are looking, you know, still for the multifamily. I think we actually bought a single family home in October. I forgot to say, but, so if we see a deal, we'll buy it, you know, but, small multifamily, or I would kind of like to get into just the small, larger multifamily, I guess the small apartments. So, you know, from 5 to 10 units or 5 to 12 units, if anyone has a deal that wants to send it my way, go for it. But, so we'd like to get maybe one in there. We're looking at Airbnb. So we're kind of, we got a few things we're looking at, which we definitely want to buy. Our goal is at least 2 more properties this year. So we're going to kind of see how it all plays out.
And then what? I mean, at what point are you basically a FI and you can retire? And then do you keep going after that? What do you think?
So I think we want, well, okay. Our plan is, we wanted to get to about 12 properties. That's our 5,000 a month goal in just straight passive income. Because we do have other streams of income as well. And in 2 years, we want to take our kids and travel around the world. So my husband's from England, and we met living and teaching in Europe. And we want to give our kids that experience and to be able to see things outside of our bubble here, right? Mm-hmm. Outside of the country and kind of real world experiences. So we want to go do that for a good couple years. We may settle back in Europe for a little bit. My husband kind of now wants his kids to have a couple years in England and experience that. But I mean, we'll always come back here because it's our home. But that's kind of what our plan is. We think we could do it with 12 properties for $5,000 a month. That would cover our expenses. As I said, along with a couple other streams of income that we have, if it's higher, that would be great. Yeah. And then we're going to kind of see from there. Yeah, that's kind of what our main game plan is, but we think we're going to hit our, fire number in 2 years' time. And so that's kind of, then we're going to travel the world and see kind of where that leads. I never want to stop working, but I just want to be able to work on my own time doing what I personally want and what our family wants and what's best for all of us. So, and in the meantime, we get to spend a lot more time together and kind of have these experiences and share with them. Cause we always talk about, like, you know, they see a picture of the Great Wall of China and we're like, Mommy and Daddy went there. And they're like, aww. Oh, yeah, my daughter always says that. So, or, you know, wherever we see, or, you know, the Colosseum in Rome, we're like, oh, we met near there, you know, so we want to kind of get to have those experiences with them. So that's our plan. We'll see how it goes.
I love it. And that was a very well said way, very well said description of what retirement is and can be.
Yeah, I mean, That's it. That's the goal, is kind of doing what you want, when you want, with who you want, wherever you want. And
exactly.
That's the target, right?
And that may mean work, right?
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't have to. I mean, it, yeah, exactly. So I won't belabor the point, but is there anything else, Mary, you want to add before we wrap up?
I don't think so. I just, you know, I have said this, but anyone can do this. I am not special. I'm not particularly intelligent. We're not rich. We were both teachers, although I have a slightly different job now, but it's kind of a similar field. You just have to decide what you want to do, put your plans in place, and just go for it. And you know, it will benefit you down the road. Even if you can keep your 9-to-5 job, you just want to make sure that your retirement is what you want it to be, and that you have enough money, you can retire when you want. You know, our properties to the single family homes is going to cover our kids' college. So you've got to just have those plans in place, and not kind of rely on what society kind of has told us to do, because it hasn't always worked out for people, you know, and we don't know if pensions are going to be enough in the future, or if 401ks are going to be enough. So I just recommend everyone kind of really think about it, and anyone can do it, basically.
Managing money is a huge part of adulting. I say this pretty much every time. Investing absolutely needs to be a part of managing your money. And real estate, in my opinion, and Mary's too, is the absolute best way to do that. So Mary, why don't you tell people how to get in touch with you?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at thepennydrop3. I post information about getting started in real estate. I post about my own properties and kind of give as much information as I can, and talk a little bit about budgeting as well. And so that's the best place for now to get a hold of me.
Perfect. So you guys can follow me on Twitter at Adulting is Easy. I'm also on Facebook. You can email me at realadultingiseasy@gmail.com. You can show support at patreon.com/adultingiseasy. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Hopefully, Mary and I have made adulting a little easier for you.